All righty, welcome back in. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. College football is back. I know we had week zero last weekend, but week one is officially underway with some Thursday night games. You got Minnesota and Nebraska. That's 3-0 Golden Gophers, as there is 6:50 remaining in this low-scoring game. 6:51 remaining in the first half. Utah did just score. I believe they made the extra point, too. So that puts Utah up 14-3 up against Florida. No Cam Rising in this game. I don't know about you, Hickey, right now. There's a fly in this studio. Actually, maybe a moth. We've had a moth problem here, but that's been usually more on your side of the glass, right? That's nothing new. I think we've had like a moth problem on your side of the glass in the last 5 months or so, and I guess they never found a way to clean that up here in our wonderful CBS Sports Radio headquarters?
No, sir.
Now it's starting to infiltrate into this side of the studio as well. I was just speaking at a moth fly. This could be a tongue twister right past my mouth. And I was like, what the heck was that? I thought it was a fly at first, but then I realized that it was a moth. So we'll try to give you the sports any way that we can, right? As I used to say with the great Mike Francesa. But man, when we have moths in this studio, I guess when you go back to where our studios used to be, man, that was Kauffman Astoria Studios. That place was a real dump. Man, this is a 5-star resort compared to that place that we used to be in. I remember going there as I was a kid. There's like rats running around, roaches running around. And I'm not talking about some of the part-timers, like legit rats and roaches. It was absolutely disgusting with some legendary radio people and some big TV shows as well in that Kauffman Astoria studio. So we'll keep you updated on college football in this hour. Once again, 14-3, the Utes up on the Gators of Florida and Minnesota and Nebraska in a low-scoring game of 3-0. But we're treating the show like it's a Friday since we're off tomorrow as we get a jump start on the big Labor Day weekend. So we got 5 questions, 5 answers. We do this every segment every Monday and Friday right here on CBS Sports Radio, only on the Zach Gelb Show. Let's get to a little onsides, offside. Hot take, Hickey.
Hit it! Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Hickey, what do you got?
Zach, as you mentioned, college football is here. And the biggest game of the opening weekend is on Sunday, number 5 LSU taking on number 8 Florida State. Now, last year's game was an instant classic, coming down to a blocked PAT that led to a Seminole victory. Now, both teams coming to this season, right, not only have conference title aspirations, but college football playoff expectations as well. Going to this massive game in Orlando, the Tigers are favored by 2.5 points. Onsides or offsides? Florida State will pull off the upset.
So I know technically it would be considered an upset because Florida State is the underdog, but it's only a 2-point spread. Both these teams, as Hickey so eloquently laid out, are college football playoff contenders and two of the better teams in the nation with both their great quarterbacks. And then, yeah, Verse and then Perkins as well for both teams on the defensive side of the ball. You look at this 2.5 point spread, I would stay away. But if you made me make a pick on this game, because I think it's coming down right to the end of the wire, maybe a game-winning field goal, or maybe once again down to an extra point. Like, I could see this game, I don't know if it'll be that, you know, 31-30 or something like that, maybe a little lower scoring, but it could come down to an extra point once again. I'm going to say LSU wins the game, but this is going to be this, you know, Florida State's still going to have a really special season. They'll be the better team compared to Clemson in a few weeks, but I will take the LSU Tigers in this one right now. So you said to me the Tigers are favored by 2.5, onsides or offsides. Florida State will pull off the upset. I don't think Florida State is going to win the game. I lean like 51-49% LSU over Florida State, so I will go offside.
Offside!
Biggest story in the NFL this week was the future of Jonathan Taylor. The Colts gave him a deadline of last Tuesday to find a trade partner. Never came to fruition, and now he's still a member of the Colts. Now, he was placed on PUP, meaning he'll miss at least the first 4 games of the season.
Because he's faking an injury.
Allegedly, maybe faking an injury that now is going to keep him out the first month. And injury or not, he still wants to be traded. The trade request is still out there and still a real thing, which now you look ahead. Trade deadline in the NFL, October 31st, Halloween. 8 games into the season. So him on pup, quick math there, 8 minus 4. At most, he has 4 games to show teams what he's got in the tank in order for them to trade for him. Onsides or offsides, Jonathan Taylor will be traded by October 31st.
So there was 2 teams that reportedly that we know of had interest. The Dolphins and then also the Green Bay Packers. I don't really get the Packer part of this. But regardless, Jacina Anderson said today that those 2 teams were willing to make him one of the highest paid running backs in the NFL. So that's the financial component of this. Now, here's the thing. We don't know what those teams offered in the Dolphins and the Green Bay Packers, but we do know that the Colts were trying to get Jaylen Waddle from the Dolphins to Indianapolis, which would have never happened. So I would say that him missing 4 games does not hurt these teams re-exploring when you get closer to the deadline, because it's wear and tear that's not on his body. But with that being said, is Indianapolis going to be fair in the price in return? They're not going to get a first-round pick. You already went through this nonsense with Jonathan Taylor and saying, okay, maybe Jaylen Waddle. Like, I don't think they were seriously negotiating in terms of trades. I do think teams will be willing to trade for him and give you a fair price, but it comes down to Indianapolis, and I don't think Indianapolis is going to do this. I believe the situation will get uglier. I think this will be a real contentious James Harden type of situation, but the Colts are a stupid organization. That's what you've learned the last few years, especially the last few months. The Colts are a stupid organization. And right now, they should trade Jonathan Taylor. I believe that. Because Jonathan Taylor hates their guts, and you're not willing to at least offer him a new contract. So, with that being said, I think the Colts will do the stupid thing where the value will only go down in the offseason when this gets even uglier. But in this case, I would trade him by the deadline, but I don't think Indianapolis is going to be serious about the negotiations. So you say to me, Jonathan Taylor will be traded by October 31st? Should be, but he won't be. So therefore, you ask me the wool part, I'll go offside.
Offside. Vikings tight end TJ.
Can I ask you a question here?
Sure.
Jonathan Taylor doesn't want to be there anymore. Are you starting? I know you love Jonathan Taylor, and I know you're going to tell me he just wants to get paid. We're at the point where I really think this relationship is fractured beyond repair. Unless Jim Irsay wants to give him a contract offer this season, and I don't think that's going to happen. Are you at a point now where even though JT, was he before all this your favorite player on the roster? Not a place to choose from.
I mean, I was just going to say, unfortunately, not a lot of great ones. Yeah, probably.
But he's a player, right, that you love. Are you at this point where you just go, okay, this is not going to be a win for my franchise. Just get rid of him. Are you at that point?
No. Why? Not at all. Because he's too talented a player to just throw him away.
But do you have confidence that he's eventually going to come in there and be a good soldier?
Yes.
By what week?
As soon as he's off pup. I mean, he's going to play by week 5. Maybe not, because he hasn't played or done any football activity since December. So let's just say he's on the field by week 7. Do I think by week 7 he's going to be out there and playing hard? I do.
Okay.
Because I think he has to. He can't tank it.
No, but what's going to make him want to re-sign after this year?
Well, that's a different story. I think for me, I'm worried about 2023 only. I don't mind. Honestly, I would go at that point, 10 games? I would risk 10 games, him on the team and then leaving for nothing versus trading him for like a 4th-round pick and doing nothing with him. Development for Anthony Richardson is important this year, and that's why for me, I'm worried about 2023 only. If he's traded in the offseason, different story.
Well, I think if your team seriously wanted to negotiate, they could get more than just a 4th-round pick, but your team's not taking these negotiations seriously.
You hear Chris Greer say that he never even made an offer, so how serious are the Dolphins and how serious are the Packers?
Well, when the Colts try to start the conversation with Jaylen Waddle, I would tell you to go take a hike as well. All right, next question. Let's go.
All right. Vikings tight end TJ Hockenson got paid today, grabbing a 4-year, $68.5 million deal. That is the biggest biggest tight end contract in NFL history. Now, that contract put a lot of attention on another tight end. That is Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce, who, despite being the best at his position, is just the 4th highest paid tight end right now in the league. Onsides or offsides, Travis Kelce should feel slighted and not being the top overall tight end paid.
Remember when Travis Kelce talked about how he valued more winning and the environment? He understands for them to be continuously winning and put the best roster on the field, he would rather sacrifice some dollars to continue that and still get paid
a good amount of money, even though he is underpaid compared to where the rest of the position is. Since that's his decision, I don't think he should feel slighted. If he wanted more money, if he was annoyed and went to the Chiefs and said, I want $5 more million here, and they said no, then yeah, I'd be slighted because I am a top 10 player in the league. I'm the best tight end in football. But this is by design by Travis Kelce, so you'd be feeling slighted by your own way of handling things, if that makes sense. So Travis Kelce should feel slighted? No, because this is what he wants. So offside.
Offside.
Well, let's go back to college football. Last year, opening weekend in the sport, one top 10 upset went down as number 7 Utah lost on the road to unranked Florida. This year, a few interesting matchups where maybe a top 10 team
you
can
go down.
You had
Utah in the college football playoff last year before the start of the season?
I did.
You did, right?
Yep.
I was trying to remember why I remember that game so vividly.
Not great. Not great.
And your four this year, who? A Penn State?
Georgia, number 1. Michigan, 2. Both should be 13-0. USC, 3. Penn State, 4.
Okay.
Lock it up.
If you had, now, you would say the team you're least confident in then is Penn State out of those four teams?
Yeah, I mean, them or USC to be. I mean, I'm a little worried. I think Penn State can absolutely go 11-1.
I agree.
I'm a little nervous that the team, honestly, that scares me the most is Clemson. They run the table, they're going to go in. I think they do have a chance to run the table.
And even if they have one loss, they could get in too.
Could. That's going to be a little trickier. Their strength of schedule depends on Florida State if they stay in the top 10 or flail out.
I don't know. But, if you're a one-loss ACC champ, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to keep you out.
See how their schedule, you know, kind of breaks down.
Because remember, they play Florida State, which is a highly viewed team.
Right now, they do, yes. You know, these things at work, they're, you know, top 10 now. All of a sudden, in a month from now, they're two losses and out of, you know, in obscurity.
My four, I go Georgia, Michigan, LSU, and then Ohio State. I have two SEC teams, two Big Ten teams. The team I'm most concerned about is actually LSU because you play Florida State to start off the season, tough game. And then also there's always the Alabama factor where everyone's down in Alabama right now and you usually know how that winds up. But I think that there's a good chance that there's two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams this year. I think the Pac-12 beat up on one another. I like Washington to win the Pac-12 and the ACC. I do go with Florida State to win the conference.
Some of those teams you mentioned are
playing. Oh, and by the way, sorry.
This weekend?
Texas in the Big 12.
Hook 'em. Any chance of an upset? Let's see. Number 3, Ohio State on the road. Tough conference opener at Indiana. Maybe not a tough team, but tough in-conference road game to start the season.
Tom Allen ain't winning that game.
Number 10, Washington hosting Boise State. Should be an electric shootout there.
Good game.
Broncos did win 10 games last year. Number 7, Penn State host West Virginia. And number 9, Clemson, like Ohio State, starting their conference season on the road at Duke. Onsides or offsides? One of these top 10 teams will lose this weekend.
I would love for West Virginia to open up a can of whoop-ass and make Hickey just cry at Happy Valley. Actually, not even a beatdown. Penn State, like, hits the upright. And it's no good, and they lose. And Hickey is just at Happy Valley, all miserable. Can you make one guarantee for me? One guarantee. One little favor.
One guarantee?
Yeah.
What is it?
Can we win or lose? I'm going into this, you know, Penn State should win the game. Can we get an instant reaction video of you at Happy Valley? Like at the stadium after the game concludes? Either way, the outcome.
I don't know. We'll see.
Why can't that just be a yes? I think Ryan underscore Hickey 3 on Twitter. After every Penn State game, I need an instant reaction. I need the immediate take, like 30 seconds after the game ends. When you're like an emotional wreck in a good way or a bad way. I need the emotion of Hot Take Hickey right after the game. Because you're putting it all out there for this season. You're calling your shot. I need instant reaction videos.
All right.
You played West Virginia and Delaware the first 2 weeks of the season. You don't really have a game until Ohio State. Okay? Give me some videos.
I'm worried
here.
About one
I want
game
you to really lay into being obnoxious. I want you to be the Penn State obnoxious fan.
One game, one quarter, one play. That's all I'm worried about. All I'm worried about is the opening kickoff against West Virginia. Whoever wins a coin toss, if Penn State wins it and receives, well, I hope they don't receive. I hate receiving first. If they kick off, cover the kickoff, If you receive it, run it back for a touchdown. That's all I'm worried about right now.
Utah just ran a trick play. They had a receiver wide open and overthrew him. It would have been a touchdown that would have made it 20-3 up against Florida. Man, you couldn't have designed that any better. And then the execution on the throw was just right out of reach. Man, oh, man.
That's why
right
off
the fingertips. Yeah. So I need those. I need those videos. That's what I need. Onside or offside, one of these top 10 teams will lose this weekend. Ohio State will win. Washington will win, but it'll be a shootout. Penn State will beat West Virginia. Clemson Duke could be interesting, but I'll go with Clemson. So I will go offside.
Offside.
No Middle Tennessee over Alabama. I didn't include them, but if you want to, you know, feel frisky, the floor is yours.
I'm doing my Saban reaction to you. I'm just not even answering the question.
Okay. That is a no. All right, finally.
He's looking at me like, you're going to speak?
The 49ers apparently are planning to handle Christian McCaffrey with kid gloves this season. Now, according to ESPN's Dan Graziano, San Francisco is going to take CMC off the field more than the Panthers did, as he said, quote, because they know McCaffrey's injury history and want to avoid overloading him, end quote. Obviously, right? Super Bowl or bust season for the 49ers. Think you want one of your best players on the field as much as possible. So I'll ask you, onsides or offsides? It's a smart idea by the 49ers to limit CMC.
So the question is, what does limit mean?
I didn't see any numbers. Let's just say an arbitrary, if he has 25 touches a game, let's say between running the ball and catches, let's say he goes from 25 to 20 a game. Arbitrary.
I do think he's winning Offensive Player of the Year. Uncertainty with Debo Samuel. Is he more the receiver 2 years ago or last year? Ayuk, I like. Kittle's good. But Brock Purdy isn't the strength of that team. The player that scares me most on the offensive side of the ball is Christian McCaffrey. If you want to chop down the carries by a few, I'm fine with that. Because you got to remember, for the 49ers, you need him on the field in the playoffs to try to go out there and win a Super Bowl. So I'm okay with it in reason. That's the way that I'll word it on sides. All righty. Zach Gelb shows CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break. Dave Wyman's going to join us. We'll preview the Seahawks coming up 20 minutes from now. But we come on back, a little secret at Ole Miss, but it may not be a good secret. And are we missing the point on Kyler Murray? We'll get to that next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. Dave Wyman's going to join us coming up 20 minutes from now as we will preview the Seattle Seahawks season. And then after that, only one more first and goal to go before the season is here, as we have to preview the Rams at some point next week. Remember, a little setback by Cooper Kupp. Thought he was going to be able to play week one with that hamstring injury. Now that's in serious doubt after the setback that was reported today. So Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin, for whatever the reasons were, stays with Ole Miss, doesn't go to Auburn, when a lot of people thought he was going to go to Auburn. They play Mercer coming up on Saturday. They'll win that game. But right now, we still don't know who the quarterback is going to be. I believe it's going to be Jackson Dart. I would be surprised if it isn't Jackson Dart. But what is Spencer Sanders' role going to be? And Hickey, when I look at this, I still don't get why Spencer Sanders, even though Lane Kiffin's one of the brightest offensive minds in the sport, and maybe he thought he started to outwear his welcome at Oklahoma State, which I wouldn't understand why, and he just wanted something new, but that's what happens out with the transfer portal, which I'm not against. But for Spencer Sanders, who I think is a good quarterback, and at one point last year, early on, was showing that he could maybe be a Heisman Trophy candidate, for him not to be a guaranteed starter this year in college football is kind of surreal to me, but by all indications, it's going to be Jackson Dart to start the season. And I know you're going up against Mercer, so could it be a thing last year where it's like McNamara and McCarthy in that game one with Michigan, where you know who the guy is, but you looked at that situation, you knew McCarthy was better than McNamara. And it wasn't even close. In this case, I don't know how much better Jackson Dart is than Spencer Sanders. It's not like Spencer Sanders is some slouch. Like, Jackson Dart's a good player, don't get me wrong. I understand what Jackson Dart is, but it's not like Sanders is some slouch here where we kind of viewed McNamara last year.
My first take is to give Lane Kiffin a lot of credit because you're right on the surface. It doesn't make any sense.
And no one has talked about this quarterback controversy or this quarterback situation nationally. Like, everyone's been talking about Ohio State. Everyone's been talking about Alabama. But when it comes to this quarterback situation, maybe it's just because, you know, Ole Miss isn't going to win the SEC and there's college football playoff expectations for Alabama and Ohio State. That's why we talk about it more. But how many times do we blast a coach for not telling us who his quarterback's going to be?
And it's also, like, if you're Spencer Sanders, I don't know, obviously, what he was told, but I'm assuming he left Oklahoma State in large part to run a more pro-style or more NFL-ish offense than, like, a gimmicky Oklahoma State offense. But it's not like Ole Miss is that much, you know, more NFL-primed. It's still a lot of air raid kind of throwing. There's a lot of questions about Matt Corral, for example, coming out of Ole Miss, if he was going to kind of fit the mold. And it's not like his career is taking off any which way whatsoever.
Got hurt last year, got waived, and now is on the Patriots.
Right. Watch now he's going to be the next Tom Brady and just win like six more Super Bowls. So maybe that I'll eat my words as I'm saying them right now. But it's like...
Hey, say he's going to suck, all right?
It is a credit to Lane Kiffin that he's able to convince a long-tenured college quarterback to come here where the job is really anything but open. And he did it.
By the way, we're talking about good quarterback play there. Jeff Sims, the former Georgia Tech quarterback, is now at Nebraska. They're on, what, the 1 or 2 yard line?
1 yard line.
And he throws that ball up there, and the Minnesota player just intercepted it. Oh, yeah, yay. So that's 3-0 when they could have gone into halftime, bare minimum tied. Should have probably got the lead. And bad decision there by Jeff Sims. But getting back to Ole Miss, you know what's going to be compelling here? Because everyone just looks at week one, it's like, oh, Mercer, okay, it's a cupcake. What are we really going to learn about that? Two out of their first four games of the season. Tulane, who returns a lot of players from that American Athletic Conference championship team that beat USC in that crazy comeback in their bowl game. Then, okay, you play Georgia Tech. But then you get, actually, let's go further than just the first four games. You get Alabama and LSU right after that. Followed up by an Arkansas team that's solid and an Auburn team that's solid. So I think a lot of this is, yes, Jackson Dart's going to be the starter, but you have someone that's really good behind him as well that's won a lot of games. Where, like Dan Mullen said, if it gets shaky for Jackson Dart earlier, you could go to Spencer Sanders, and then maybe he just takes the baton. And you know, I think this is more so a competition where the coach knows that, you know, after week one, you're not going to really learn anything. But this could go a little bit back and forth after that with some big opponents early on in that schedule.
Plenty of quarterbacks we've seen too come on in off the bench and play well. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, like I said, especially those matchups in like early to mid-October. Big time, you know, big time ramifications if Jackson Dart struggles.
Their schedule's brutal. I know they're in the SEC. You have Tulane, you have Alabama, you got LSU, Arkansas, Auburn, A&M, Georgia. That's a one tough, you know what,
schedule. Not easy.
Oh, and some early slang too. All right, this is Justin Pugh, the former Giant and Cardinals offensive lineman, still looking to latch on with the new team coming up this football season, maybe a reunion with the Giants potentially. But I asked Justin Pugh about his now former quarterback, Kyler Murray, who's definitely been in the news as people have questioned his leadership and his work ethic as well. This is what Justin Pugh had to say last night.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think Kyler's coming into a big year on his career. He's taking a lot of slack, and that's why the quarterback position gets paid what they do. And it's not to say like to bring money into it, but a quarterback, if things are going well, they get all the praise. And if things are going bad, they're going to catch all the slack. And I will say this. When I got to Arizona in 2018, we were historically probably the worst offense in NFL history. Kyler came in and made the Cardinals relevant again. People talk about the Arizona Cardinals. We have primetime games. We didn't have those in 2018. Kyler has single-handedly helped turn the franchise around with some key components around him. He is at a point in his career where he has to choose what he wants to do and who he wants to be. And I'm looking forward to that because I know what type of man he is. I know what type of competitor he is. And I think he's going to go out and prove a lot of people wrong. I think, you know, there's a lot of doubt, and that's just going to add fuel to his fire. He's won at every level. He never lost in high school, goes and plays 1 year in college. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's been a Pro Bowler in the NFL. I think there's a little bit of embarrassment for how the Cardinals finished last year, and I wear that as well. You know, we started out 8-0 2 years ago, end up faltering down the stretch and losing those games. Our GM and head coach get fired, and now it looks like they're heading for a different path. I think the Cardinals will rebuild quickly. I just don't think this is going to be the year. I don't even know if Kyler will play this year.
So there's a lot there. Number one, that's a former teammate that was in the locker room last year speaking positively for the most part about Kyler Murray, where there's been a lot of stories out there negative when talking about Kyler Murray. So take that for what it's worth. Number two, Kyler Murray is not a bust. Kyler Murray's been a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. And I think that's something you have to point out, because is he worth the number one overall pick? No, but he has not been a bust where it's like this all-time disastrous move. With that being said, though, I don't think we'll really get an answer on who Kyler Murray is as a quarterback until he goes to his next team. Because Justin just said that he thinks that Kyler could prove people wrong. But then at the back end of that answer, Hickey, it was, I don't even know if Kyler's going to play this year. And with how late in the year he suffered that ACL injury up against the Patriots, it's unclear when he's going to get back. Also, if you get later in the season, and let's say you get cleared for the final 4 weeks of the season, is it worth it to play if the team stinks and you could get killed standing in, you know, in front of that team with no weapons around you, when it looks like that team is destined to the number one overall pick and they have two chances of getting it, not only with their own pick, but then also the Houston Texans as well? So I would be surprised at this point if Kyler Murray plays this year outside of it just being pride. I think it would be a bad business decision for him to play. But it looks like it's going to line up where they'll get the number one overall pick, they'll draft Caleb Williams, and then we'll see the redemption tour, if you want to call it, or what the potential of redemption could look like for Kyler Murray to right that wrong that he may feel exists out there with whatever new team that he does go to.
I think he will play. I think he should play. Now, to your point, whether the Cardinals want him to play, I think it's a different story. And if they're 0-10 or 1-11,
Murray wins a game in the final season, no Caleb Williams.
Right. All of a sudden, maybe there's, you know what, Kyle, take a little bit of time. But I think it just honestly, even if he's not going to play in the Cardinals, just to get back in the rhythm of things and get some sort of momentum for 2024 and kind of have a showcase of a few games, see what he's got, I think is still beneficial to him. But yeah, I think I would be very surprised if he is a Cardinal in 2024.
And there's multiple things here. He's going to have to work through rust. He's going to have to work through eventually a new environment as well. And also fighting that perception, which the Cardinals know how much he studied or didn't, that the studying habits just weren't there. And he's not putting in the work that is required of someone that's going to be a franchise quarterback in this league. So I can't wait to see what the next chapter is. But you're not going to see this next chapter be a redemption story in Arizona out in the desert. If there is going to be redemption for Kyler Murray, it's going to be on a new team at some point next year, and we'll see how that does play on out. All righty, this is Zach Gelb's show right here on CBS Sports Radio. We have to take a break. And when we come on back, we got two more first and goals to do. We'll get to the 31st team that we have. Rams still remain, but we got to get to the Seattle Seahawks. Dave Wyman's going to join us on the other side as we'll talk Seattle.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The NFL season is inching closer and closer. Who are the contenders and who are the pretenders? We have four downs to figure out your team's future. It's time now for First and Goal on the Zach Gelb Show.
Time to preview one of the better storylines from the NFL last season. That's the Seattle Seahawks. We'll do so with the former Seahawk linebacker, been a part of their radio broadcast team for the last few years. And that, of course, is Dave Wyman, kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show. Dave, appreciate the time. How you been?
I'm doing great, Zach. Fired up for football season.
So let me start you off, because a year ago, no one was giving the Seahawks a chance. Everyone was poking fun at Pete Carroll for ruining the relationship right with Russell Wilson. And a year later, everyone's done a complete 180, where a lot of people are optimistic about this team. When you look back at last year, if we could shoot Pete Carroll up with some truth serum, what do you think last year meant to him?
Well, I think it was huge for them. I mean, I don't think that they're going to dwell on the whole Russell Wilson thing. It's kind of a he said, she said thing. But if you're around the team and know what this team is about, the Seahawks didn't want to trade Russell Wilson. And, you know, so, I mean, and we do a show with John Schneider, the GM, and, you know, we did him back in February and March, and he's like, hey, this time last year we thought we were going to be rolling with Russell Wilson. So, yeah, they made the best of that trade, though. I mean, if you go and look at the results of that, now, there's young guys, so it's all about projection, and hopefully they picked up some good guys, but Charles Cross and, you know, guys like Boye Mafe, not to mention they got Fant and Drew Lock. You know, it's been a win-win as far as that trade goes. And that's, again, I think something that they really did not anticipate happening. So they made the best of it. And that's that last year, that was a Pete Carroll special. That coaching job that he did, I mean, taking something that's awful. You also cut Bobby Wagner. I mean, these guys were the leaders in the Super Bowl years, and he made the best of it. And I predicted they were going to be 9-8, and the reason why was because of Pete and John. I feel like they've earned that. Been to the playoffs 10 times over the last, well, this is their 14th year. So, yeah, I think it was, like I said, it was a John Schneider, Pete Carroll special last year, and I'm hoping for more of the same.
And it's funny how it works out when you bring up Bobby Wagner. Last year you thought he'd be in a great position with the Rams to go try to win a Super Bowl. Then he had to leave the Rams this offseason because he wants another chance to go chase another Lombardi. He winds back up with a place that he knows oh so well in Seattle. What have been the early reports here on Bobby Wagner and what we could kind of expect out of him, what he's been able to do in the NFL for so long?
Well, first of all, he's in great shape. I don't see any of him having lost a step. You know, there was a play everybody remembered from camp where he covered a running back on a little wheel route and 60 yards downfield, knocked the ball down. I mean, he looks as athletic and as good as ever. The question mark is, how many reps is he going to get? Because if you look at his career, it's 97, 98. He doesn't like coming off the field. And they have, you know, a young guy in Jordan Brooks that they kind of want to be the leader, who's in going into his fourth year, I think. And then, you know, he's got, you got Jamal Adams, you've got Quandre Diggs. So how he fits in, how many reps he takes is really a mystery, I think, to everybody. I actually asked that question in a meeting, and Clint Hurt, the D coordinator, didn't really say anything, didn't really know. So I don't know what the plan is for him. I can just tell you that he looks pretty good.
Let's get to the next down. Dave Wyman here with us. When you look at that secondary continuing off the defense, Devon Witherspoon could have a monster rookie season. We saw what Tariq Woolen did last year. Both those guys obviously have to stay healthy. You still got Quandre Diggs there on the back end. And you bring in Julian Love this offseason as well. I look at the secondary, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be the Legion of Boom, clearly, but I think the secondary is a high ceiling here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're trying to figure out what to do, where to put guys. I mean, Kobe Bryant, who was a rookie last year, I mean, that guy had 4 forced fumbles, you know, made a couple sacks. He was all over the field. Like, where does he fit in? You mentioned Julian Love. If Jamal Adams is healthy, I think he could be a guy that starts up in the box playing like a linebacker. And that kind of feeds into the whole Bobby Wagner rep thing, you know, that mystery. So, yeah, they're totally loaded. And a couple of guys that battled this preseason were Michael Jackson and Trey Brown. And they both did really well. I think Trey Brown might be the starter opposite of Tariq Woolen. We really don't know about Devon Witherspoon. He's the big mystery. We haven't seen him in a game. We've seen him at practice a couple times. But yeah, they have just an abundance of great coverage guys and a really good coach coaching them, Carl Scott, who's just brilliant. And he repaired the pass game defense last year. They were number 31 for 2 years in a row. And last year, I think they were 15 or 16. So it's gotten a lot better. They got a lot of young guys, a lot of choices there.
Let's get to the next down. Dave Wyman here with us. All right, let's get to the quarterback in Geno Smith. As he said, everyone wrote him off. He didn't write back. He wins comeback player of the year. He was sensational. Some people wonder, though, how much regression is there going to be with Geno this season? At the end of the year, how do you think we're talking about the Seahawks quarterback?
Well, I think it's fair to, because the first part of it, you know, first, what, 8-9 years of his career told one story. Last year told a totally different one. I mean, he was top 10 in pass attempts. And this might be a team that passes more than it runs, which is unusual for a Pete Carroll team. He was number one in completion percentage. He was a Pro Bowler. I mean, I get that people are like, okay, I want to see one more year. But I think you're going to see pretty close to what you saw last year. He made great decisions last year. Interception total went up a little bit at the end. I think he finished with like 11 or something, but it was still less than Tom Brady. And, you know, he looked really good. And I think, you know, having another year under his belt with the same guy, Shane Waldron, knowing that he's going to be the man, I don't know if he can repeat what he did last year, but I think it's going to be somewhere close. He's a good quarterback. And, you know, last year when we played the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes was talking about Geno and his spiral and his accuracy. And I'm like, hey, when you hear it from somebody like that, you know, that's not just the team radio guy talking about it. You know, that's coming. That's pretty high praise there.
And the other thing is, I think he's in a great situation because you look at the talent, right? He already had DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I know that Jaxon Smith-Njigba had the wrist surgery, but he's already back in practice. If Jaxon Smith-Njigba could be the wide receiver that he was at Ohio State 2 years ago, you got three just unbelievable weapons to throw the football to.
You're right. You know, and JSN, obviously unproven at the pro level, but what we've seen has been phenomenal. The other thing you've seen is Tyler Lockett is just the most underrated player in the league. I mean, if you look at his numbers, and he's just got a very sort of quiet demeanor. He's a lead-by-example guy, just always open, kind of like Doug Baldwin used to be back in the day. And then DK is such a pro. I mean, everything you hear from this guy, first of all, he's just physically, I mean, he looks like a defensive end. But watching him out there work with Geno, the way he varies his speed and explodes at the end of routes and catches the ball, and he's amazing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see both of those guys go over 1,000. And, yeah, anything you get from JSN I think is kind of really like icing on the cake.
So, Dave, just going off of that, we talked about the praise for the wide receiving unit and how they added in this offseason. Also the running backs, too. You had Kenneth Walker as my favorite running back in the draft from a year ago. Now you add in Zach Charbonnet. It just continues to be a savvy team there in Seattle.
Yeah, and, you know, that's something that Pete Carroll really loves is having a good run game. The offensive line looks really good. But yeah, those two guys, it's kind of interesting. Talk to John Schneider and Pete Carroll. And, you know, one of the things they say is that there's not a lot of really good tacklers out there. And I think, you know, that's kind of in the preseason mode. Nobody's hitting anymore. I feel like, and I think Schneider felt this way too, that these guys can start running people over. And, you know, there's not a lot of great tackling going on in the league just in general. And, you know, my question to him was, like, do these two guys know that? And I think they do. So, I mean, you look at Charbonnet, Ken Walker's not a lower his head and run somebody over, but Charbonnet is. And, you know, I think that could really kind of be that 1-2 punch that they're looking for. Both of them catch the ball great out of the backfield. So, yeah, it's, you know, again, they're young, but, you know, all this talk about Breece Hall with the Jets kind of annoys everybody in Seattle because we had a 1,000-yard rusher here in Kenneth Walker, and nobody seems to be talking about him that much.
And he missed some time, too, as well, last year. Let's get to the final down. Dave Wyman here with us, former Seahawks linebacker, part of their radio broadcast team. All right, I'll end you with this, Dave. You look at the NFC, the two best teams on paper, Eagles, 49ers. After that, that third spot is up for grabs. I've been saying it all offseason. I think the Seahawks could be the third best team in the NFC. What are kind of your expectations for this squad this year?
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be a really good team. I just think in order to make that kind of, you know, like the 49ers, they screwed up that Trey Lance trade as bad as you can screw something up. I mean, three first-rounders to move up 9 spots, and then you trade them for a fourth, yet they still have, I think, the best roster in the NFL. So that they're always going to be tough, you know. And, you know, I know Philly really good, but I feel like if the young guys come through, and there's lots of ifs, I think. Here's why. I'm an old-school guy. You know, I played in the 80s and 90s when Chuck Knox would say, you lose a game for every rookie that you start, you know, and not – believing in the young guys. But I think if you believe in these young guys, I think they could be the third best team and the third best roster in the NFC.
How about that? Dave Wyman, enjoy the season. We appreciate the time today. Thanks so much. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
You bet. Thanks, Zach.
There he is, Dave Wyman, joining us, talking a little Seattle Seahawks right here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. As we only have one more first and goal segment left, next week we'll preview the Los Angeles Rams. And that's actually all the time that we do have today. I'd like to thank Coach Dan Mullen for stopping by, and also former Cowboy and Jaguars wide receiver in Jimmy Smith. I'd like to thank Hot Take Hickey for producing this extravaganza, and each and every one of you for calling, listening, and tweeting the show. You can always interact with us on social media, Instagram, and Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. I'm off from our CBS Sports Radio show tomorrow. I'll be at MetLife Stadium for Bruce Springsteen and the legendary E Street Band, so very excited to attend another Bruce Springsteen concert. I will be working, though, tomorrow if you want to hear me on the radio locally on WFAN in New York, if you're in the New York area, 101.9 FM or Sports Radio 66 on your AM dial 660. And we'll have Phil Sims join us, so that will be a fun show. And if you're not in the New York area, you could always listen on the free Odyssey app. All righty, have a great, fun, safe Labor Day weekend. We'll come back on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. We're off on Monday for Labor Day, and we'll recap a first weekend of college football and get you set for the NFL, which will start Thursday of next week. So have a great night, everybody. Have a safe weekend. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.